heart and me. Like discarded dreams trembled underneath a tide of careless feet. It's the same song playing everywhere I go. It's like an army marching right through me. Nowhere to go but the horizon. Where then will I call my home? Nowhere to go but the horizon. Where then will I call my home? Just fragments ransack memories. Dark river snakes across this murky heart. Boatman sings his downstream melody. Nowhere to go but the horizon. Where then will I call my home? Nowhere to go but the horizon. Where then will I call my home? How many roads have I wandered? None and each by one. Behind me the bridges have crumbled. Where then will I call my home? Where then will I call my home? Where then will I call my home? Where then will I call my
Ja, hallo, hier ist Felice Herrschaft, heute mit einer Sendung über die Aufnahme der Statusgespräche im Kosovo. Und zwar folgt jetzt direkt im Anschluss an diese Musik ein Interview mit Kai Eide, Botschafter Eide, der den Report über die Situation im Kosovo jetzt abgegeben hat am 7. Oktober. Und darüber führen wir ein Gespräch, wie wird sich jetzt die Hoffnung auf den Staat, den 45. europäischen Staat, möglicherweise in den nächsten Jahren erfüllen. Daran im Anschluss folgt ein Interview mit Ersin Shkololi, der auch beteiligt ist an dem Academy Remix Projekt, das jetzt am Freitag hier in Frankfurt eröffnet wird. Ein Austauschprojekt der Städteschule Frankfurt mit Exit in Pristina. Und danach folgt ein Gespräch mit Beche Zufall, der jetzt einen Roman geschrieben hat. Der Glanz der Fremde. Ein Migrationsroman, könnte man sagen, aus dem Kosovo.
Dimoni shoka të gjithë tokë, në hallin tim jo të vogël. Ka disa ditë, kot jam të pritë, ato të qeni.
So the first question would be if you could remember the time or describe the situation when you started to make research with your team in Kosovo. I think that was in July.
Yes, we started that in July, and of course it was my view that to write a report about Kosovo without spending significant time outside of Krishna would not be possible.
Yeah.
There's always a temptation that you go to speak to political leaders in Pristina, in perhaps in Mitrovica, you speak to political leaders in Belgrade and in the big parts, but of course you have to look at the reality, and the reality is mostly outside of Pristina. So we spent, in July, we spent 10 days traveling around in Kosovo and had 81 events. Meeting people and very different kind of occasions, from 3 people to 450 people.
Yeah.
So I think that that was the most important part of work on the report.
Yeah. So how was it to talk with people outside of Pristina? What were your impressions?
Well, first of all, of course, as I said, there is a Pristina reality, and then there are the reality or realities outside of Pristina, and of course we spoke on a number of issues, but concentrated to a large extent on the inter-ethnic relationship. And there I must say I was disappointed to see that a multi-ethnic Kosovo is on the ground not always seen as an objective.
Yeah.
And that the basis for developing good inter-ethnic relations do not exist today, and the process of reconciliation has simply not started.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this would be my second question. How was the process of reconciliation reflected in the talks you had?
Well, it reflected negatively.
Negatively.
As I said, I don't think it started yet, and I must say, first of all, I believe that the leaders in Pristina,
yeah,
and the Kosovo Albanian leaders and also the Kosovo Serb leaders and all others have to say to themselves and also state publicly clearly,
yeah,
they do want the process of reconciliation, that they want to encourage the population to engage in such a process, and the leaders of course must go in front. We've seen some few visits by the Prime Minister and by some ministers to go to villages of minority population, but they are sporadic and they do not represent any process of reconciliation.
Yeah.
So I think that the leaders are half-hearted, and if the leaders are half-hearted, then of course they do not provide the impulse towards the population that they should as leaders do. And I must say one thing here, particularly with regard to the Kosovo Albanian leaders, because they carry the main responsibility as representatives of the majority population.
Yeah.
They ask for recognition, they ask for integration, they ask for investment, and if they ask for so much, they should also give a lot. They should show generosity, and I don't think they do at the moment.
Yeah. So this would be something that would have to be changed. And in which way would you say will the Kosovo Albanians the capacity and autonomy to create or to lead a state?
Well, you know, now you're going into a question of what kind of future status you will have. And
yeah, and how is autonomy reflected? Maybe this is one problem in this.
When you say autonomy, you know, I would rather put it this way.
Yeah.
They have built up as institutions over the last 6 years,
yeah,
which cover almost all relevant areas in Pristina for the central level and at the local level.
Yeah.
The legislative, the executive, and the judicial system has been set up, and of course they have established a health system, educational system, and so on, which delivers services to almost all the population. I think that's good. That's quite impressive in such a short period of time. And when we go from one ministry to the other, to the Prime Minister's office, we take it almost for granted that we can do that. But if you look back at 1999, there was absolutely nothing there. There was an institutional vacuum, and I think it's impressive what they have done in the course of so few years. So they do have an administrative capability, but there are serious shortfalls in that capability.
Yeah. And I think how you argued about to start the talks is a very positive example in negotiation. So how would you say is the standard implementation process one aspect for positive development in or to make a dynamization of development in the Kosovo?
But you know, I'm disappointed about the standard implementation so far, of course.
Yeah.
In some areas you see real progress, and some others you have little or even no progress, perhaps, and much more should have been done. But my argument was, and I believe that this is true, that nothing will become better by postponing the status discussions.
Yeah.
And I believe that if the international community behaves the way it should, and if the negotiators take it seriously, then they can use the status process as leverage to improve the standards. And
yeah.
They have to do that, because if they now ignore or neglect the standards, then the status they end up with could easily become a failed status.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a very great risk for all of us. So it's not enough to say now we focus on the status, and that is the temptation I think for many, but you have to do both things at the same time. It's a package, and you cannot untie that link between the two.
Yeah. And how would you say are the parallel structures from the Serbs in Kosovo now, how are they reflected? And maybe has the very late established decentralization to do with these parallel structures of the Serbs?
Well, yeah, I think you remember they were parallel structures for 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, from the Albanians.
The Albanian side, and now you have parallel structures from the Serbs. Some of the motives are exactly the same. It's a political demonstration.
Yeah.
And there's also some anxiety behind the whole thing. And I don't think there's any possibility of having the Serb parallel structures integrated into the normal structures
mm-hmm.
where we are in the status talks. But I seriously believe, as I've written, that if you are ambitious and give the Kosovo Serbs and other minorities a high degree of local government,
yeah.
into the government themselves in municipalities where they live with a comfortable majority,
yeah.
then I think it would be much easier to fold the parallel structures into the official framework. But if you don't give them an ambitious decentralization plan, then it's going to be terribly difficult. And I also think that, honestly, the Kosovo Albanians should be much more relaxed when it comes to contacts between Kosovo Serbs and Belgrade in the future. I think the Kosovo Serbs must be able to have some kind of contact, some kind of links. But the formal links and the links of authority must go from the municipalities to Pristina.
Yeah.
Whatever the solution of the status process is.
Yeah. So the decentralization can help to help the municipalities to create this process?
Absolutely. I think I regret that we haven't done much more on the decentralization before.
Yeah.
It was used in 2003 before the elections, where we said to the leaders in Belgrade, if you encourage your Kosovo Serb voters to take part in the elections, then we will start discussing decentralization. And that was the right message, but it was never followed up.
Mm.
And therefore, when the elections came now in 2000 and 4, where the first election was 2002, I'm sorry, 2004.
Yeah.
We said exactly the same thing. But it was not credible, because we didn't follow it up last time. We didn't follow it up now in 2004. So we have talked a lot about decentralization, but never took it seriously. I think we should do as we did Macedonia, and as we did in southern Serbia, where the international community got very, very much involved in order to give people of Albanian ethnicity a breathing space and possibility to govern themselves. We should do the same for the Serbs and the other minorities in Kosovo.
Yeah. And how does the peace building process is different from other states in ex-Yugoslavia?
But first of all, what you saw in Croatia and in Bosnia-Herzegovina, these processes took place inside sovereign states.
Yeah.
Here we're talking about Kosovo, which is not a sovereign state. It's part, formerly, of Serbia-Montenegro, administered by the UN, and in a situation where the status has to be defined, so we have to walk very carefully. we have to be sure that we do not create situations that could lead to enhanced tension in the region as such. And we have to have all the neighbors on board. They have to support, understand the process. That's one important element which is different. And the other is, in Bosnia, for instance, we had so many plans. So many plans that had been elaborated before Dayton. And they were not so unsimilar from what became the Dayton Agreement. So many preparations had taken place over the few last months before Dayton. But here we have no preparations. We have no previous plan.
Yeah.
I would say to the negotiators that they have to walk very carefully. They have to spend time trying to explore the situation and explore the position of the parties, try to establish what the agenda is, and then move into a more serious phase of negotiations. It's going to take time, and I think it's important that they do not try to rush this.
And for to come to the role and the responsibilities of the international community, you are suggesting that the EU could play a more prominent role in Kosovo, but don't you think that could be a problem as well if there is a kind of new Europeanization in Kosovo? Because
I don't think they should play a much greater role. You know, today we have a situation of 17,000 KFOR troops, thousands of UN personnel.
Yeah.
If not more of OSCE personnel, and we have very, very small number of EU representatives in Kosovo. I think that cannot continue. It is the European Union that will have the leverage. It's towards Europe that the people of the region are looking, and therefore politically the European Union play much more of a role. I think also the European Union is the only organization that can keep the pressure on in order to ensure further progress on standards implementation. So the EU must simply now say to itself, I believe that the time has come to enhance our presence and engagement in Kosovo significantly.
Yeah.
Well, one of the first tasks, I think, would be to help them build up the law and order situation, improve the law and order situation.
Yeah.
We need an EU police and justice mission, in my view, that can help them help provide the expertise required, help them to strengthen their own systems and strengthen their ability to address very difficult cases and thereby enhance the respect for rule of law. That is also a precondition for a sustainable multi-ethnic Kosovo.
Yeah. And could you imagine a kind of state-building process which is not departed like it's like the situation is now in Mitrovica, just to have there this disparagement?
I'm not sure if I'm...
Ob eine Staatenbildung möglich ist, die nicht auf eine Teilung hinausläuft, eine Staatenbildung, die nicht.
Yes, absolutely. I think that is possible. I think it's possible to build Kosovo without partition, and we should really do that. But as I say, I think an ambitious decentralization plan, it would be a very important instrument in that respect. And those in Pristina who believe that decentralization is a threat should think again, because I see it not as a threat but as a promise of keeping Kosovo as one unit, whatever it becomes, and to avoid any kind of threat of partition. So there I must say some of the leaders that I met in Pristina, I think, should look again at the requirements with regard to decentralization, and as I said, be a little bit more generous than they actually are today.
Yeah. What I experienced when I conducted interviews, the most Kosovo Albanians are very harmed by the situations because they experience a lot of cruelties by the Serbs. So this is why they accept the Serbs, but they don't want to be in contact really. So, but it would be possible for most of the Albanians I talked with
to build together a state. So I don't know if you heard things like that from people.
But when you say state, you know, I'm not talking about any kind of solution.
Yeah, okay.
But what I would say is that they have to learn to live together.
Yeah.
They have to live together. Will they integrate in any way? I don't think so, and they never were integrated, really.
Yeah.
Kosovo Serbs, Kosovo Albanians, and others lived side by side. And that should be possible. There were always very, very few inter-ethnic marriages, etc.
Yeah.
So we have to be realistic in our expectations. But it should be possible for them to live together in a decent way again.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you did really, with your team, a very excellent report. And
wir hören hier das Stück Kill Bill bei Labinot Vajrami, und zwar hat mir das Toton aufgenommen. Ein Elektro-Tech-House-DJ aus Pristina. In Pristina oder im Kosovo gibt es die größte Tech-House-Szene neben New York, also wesentlich größer. Auf jeden Fall, das hier ist schon mal ein albanisches Stück. Wir hören jetzt weiter ein Gespräch mit Ersin Shkololi, der jetzt auch am Freitag nach Frankfurt kommen wird und dort eben auch an Diskussionen teilnehmen über die Zukunft von Kunstinstitutionen, als auch warten auf den Start. Das ist eine Diskussion, die samstags stattfinden wird im Portikus, und Freitagabend gibt es eben eine Eröffnung im Portikus Meet, also Academy Remix, Städteschule Frankfurt meets Missing Identity. Über diese Fragen der Missing Identity spreche ich jetzt mit Ersin.
my if we can speak about the history of my education, how I got educated and how I came to this point, then we could talk a lot about the time when I study or when I finish my high school, because since elementary school, from the year 89, the parallel system of the school started in Kosovo, because also Milosevic system was in poverty, you know, it came to the point when everything was on his power and all the Albanians were thrown up from the jobs, and also the system of the school had to be changed comparing to him. This was 89 when it started, and the parallel system started then, because Albania didn't accept the way how it should be taught in the schools, because then you should learn about Serbian history and all of that things, you know. And what I mean, this was when I was at 7th class of elementary school, this whole thing started. So I finished 8th class of elementary school in this parallel system when it started. So it's the first generation of the people who didn't went ever to to high school as a regular school, because in high school we had all totally different system. We finished high school on the houses, private houses, by changing every day one by one, because you had to lose this point where police could find you in the classes. So this was a kind of my education of high school in this parallel system, and this continued also with the faculty, which I studied Faculty of Fine Arts in Pristina, and it was the same logic of the or system of the teaching. We had these private houses, permanent, which we always used to go on these houses, on the basements, but in the different parts of the city, by always changing this, making confusion of the where it's really held, this teaching. So this was actually, now if you see all my education went like this. So I finished also the faculty. It's at 98 when the war started and ended, and then after it started this institutions, people coming back to the institutions, Albanians start a different type of education and also start the reforms in the education systems and all these things. So this was more or less how it developed as education. And as an artist, I start to work, of course, in the faculty as a student, but I start to exhibit and to do a project and conceptualize them since 97, when we did the first exhibition of young artists in the Dodona Gallery, which was the first normal institution of the gallery, if we could say, in Pristina, as an alternative space. Because normally in that time it didn't exist any exhibiting place, because the gallery in National Gallery of today, in that time they were thrown out, the Albanians, from the gallery, and as Albanians didn't have a right to exhibit there. So all the exhibiting places were cafes and pizzerias and restaurants used as a small museums and exhibiting places.
What did you exhibit?
And 97, the first exhibition which I exposed was the project called Boutique Dodona. It was a project done also by because in my work I always try to reflect on the situation and what surrounds me, the problems and what I deal everyday life in Kosovo. So in that time, we, of course, everybody was afraid. The war already started in the villages, but it was not formal war still until 98, when everything deported and everything started for real. And I kind of reflect on that fear of the people. And I did a boutique, the Donau, which was kind of simulating a boutique, but it was not a boutique. It was this clothes of the people, which they would look in as a clothes of it for identification of the people, exposed on the walls. And it was the cabin where you change the clothes, but with a coffin. Coffin with a mirror, you would see yourself in the coffin. This fear of carrying your fear with you, and this. So this was the first project conceptualized done in the Gallery de Donau, and the other exhibition was with 99 after the war, immediately in National Gallery. It was a big exhibition about the post-war Kosovo, and then I exhibit the work called Bad, which has to do a lot with homage to the old people who died, but he didn't have a decent graving or ceremony. And I did a bed, traditional bed, which we use for a day of the when person dies and the ceremony which they do. They put the person in the middle of the room on this bed, and the woman cries for and remembers what he would done when he was alive, and things like that. So I did this bed as a as a homage, or as a thing which, in the time of the war, many people were, of course, not found as a bodies, but the others were all graved in the yards because they were afraid to go and grave them outside and things like that. So didn't have any possibility to have a ceremony of the death. So this was the reason why I did this work and why it was exposed, especially in Gallery of Kosovo. So this is how it started. 2000, I started to get an invitation from outside. First exhibition was Brussels, and of course then continued. And of course then curators and different people started to show interest about the work. And I got started to get invited to the other shows, continuing till now.
Yeah. And how would you describe the situation at the faculty now? I met some painters studying art, and say it was like a situation that it is still a kind of parallel system. The teachers are taking, getting money for their students, and that's why they have so too many students and big, huge classes, and it's not really very easy to teach or to teach art. They call it a corrupt system.
In this point, I wouldn't say anything, and I wouldn't know to say, because I don't know this idea, and I don't want to say something which I heard from somebody. But what I would comment on the academy is that the system of the teaching, it starts on 60s. System of the teaching, when in the academy it is today, they are speaking about the to open a class of new media. For me, it's tough, because it doesn't have anymore anything like new media that already should be applied on the academy, not talked about that as a separated segment. This is what I would say for the system of the teaching I would comment, but I wouldn't comment about corruption and things like that, because I'm not informed, and I'm maybe not the right person to be asked. Maybe these professors are the right person to be asked on this.
Yeah. But she's one of the better ones.
Yeah, this is, I wouldn't, I mean, in this question I wouldn't have any, I don't want to speculate.
Yeah, that's right. So, and so, how did it come to the point that you work with exits together, and how did you
because you found this idea. I think you are the one who found this idea of missing identity. So how would you say what is really missing and what is this idea of identity, which as a concept?
This was always kind of a little bit misunderstood as a thing, because when we meant missing identity, we meant for all these things which I talked previously.
Yeah.
What I missed in my studies, what Sokol missed in the time of him being exposed here, and it was no place anymore to be exposed in that 10 years period. So we actually, because me and Sokol are one of the founders of the Exit Institute for Contemporary Art, and we start not only from 2003 to work, but we start since 99, when immediately work finished, we did a project in Pea on the friendly basis, without any funding, without any thing like that. We did a project with Irving Group. Again, we did a project with Austrian artists, with photographs and things like that. So this didn't start 2003. This started much earlier, but more in friendly basis and in our enthusiasm. But in 2003, we got a visit from Katrin Klingan, and we talked about the project, and we were asked to write about it, what we would done if we would have any funding ever. So this started to be more formal since 2003, at October, when we got also the funding of Relations and Kulturstiftung, and we started to have infrastructure and to do a real project and program to invite people to pay for their coming to.
Infrastructure, office,
because we didn't work as a institute with all this infrastructure, because we didn't have any funding. So we start to work as an infrastructure and to build up actually the infrastructure, even a contemporary art infrastructure in Kosovo, by having these workshops, changing this system of, or giving opportunity to these people in academy to have another option, to hear also something else, but not by imposing inside the academy, not by entering academy and trying to change academy. No, we just wanted to offer something more, not by imposing that this is the one. But if somebody says that likes this idea, then they are welcome in this way. So this is how I start, to be involved in the Exit Institute for Contemporary Art. And now, of course, I'm responsible. I work as artistic director and responsible for the gallery and the exposing program by bringing artists. Exit Gallery in Pea.
Abschlusspräsentation von Academy Remix und Missing Identity ist am Freitag, 18. November. Das war jetzt Ersin Shkololi, eben Leiter der Kunstprojekte im Rahmen von Missing Identity, der darüber gesprochen hat, über das Parallelsystem, das sich unter dem Milosevic-Regime herausgebildet hatte, wie das jetzt eigentlich zurückgeführt wird in aktuelle Projekte. Der Glanz der Fremde von Veche Zufai ist sozusagen ein Roman, in dem zwei Protagonisten den Traum des Exils eigentlich, oder das Trauma des Exils träumen. Da hören wir jetzt direkt einen Ausschnitt.
Mein Anliegen war und ist, dass ich einfach eine Geschichte erzähle darüber, über die Träume von zwei Menschen. die einfach von einem unterdrückten und Parallelsystem in einem scheinbar und auch nicht scheinbar, sondern auch wirklich offenen Milieu und Gesellschaft kommen oder übersiedeln und es versuchen, ihre Träume wirklich auch zu verwirklichen. Jetzt kommt es dazu, dass es doch zu dem Crash kommt, also zu der Tatsache, dass es das Ganze nicht so einfach ist. Und natürlich stellt sich dann die Frage, was macht man damit, mit diesem Problem?
Ja. Das bleibt
die
ja.
Tatsache aber, dass sich diese westliche oder ja genau die westliche Seite sich nicht einmal die Mühe gegeben hat, die Frage zu stellen, sondern dass entweder im Vornehin akzeptiert, dass die da sind und dass das Ganze so toll ist, oder die andere Seite vornehin ablehnt, im Sinne, dass die niemals hierher gehört haben und niemals hierher gehören dürfen, ist dann falsch. Weil das bringt dann zu den Folgen, die wir auch heute erleben, und wir werden die noch schrecklicher, glaube ich, auch erleben, weil das einfach keinen anderen Ausweg hat. Das ist eine Einbahnstraße in meinen Augen, diese Migrations- und Emigrationsproblematik. Und für mich war es wichtig, also die Geschichte zu erzählen, nicht im richtigen Worte oder im richtigen Sinn des Wortes, im engagierten Kontext, sondern eher im und mit literarischen Mitteln das Ganze zu versuchen, sozusagen, wenn es zu erzählen, dass es dort doch Menschlichkeit, Gefühle und Leute gibt, die das irgendwie versuchen, in dem Fall der Autor versucht, das nahe zu bringen. Es ist nicht meine Aufgabe, das zu erklären, warum das so ist und wie das Ganze enden muss oder wie das Ganze gelöst werden soll.
Ist denn der Roman auch im Albanischen erschienen?
Das ist in Pristina erschienen, im Dugazini Verlag, im Jahr 2003. Und ich war sehr überrascht, dass das Buch dann gut angenommen worden ist. Weil das Buch hatte dann den Preis als Prosajahr des Buches bekommen. Ich war auch angenehm überrascht, ehrlich gesagt, weil das auch anderes ist. Also in dem Sinne, dass das Buch eher aufs Erzählen steht und nicht aufs Pathos oder aufs, wie soll ich sagen, Symbolik und Nachmachung von diesen literarischen, heutigen, unter Anführungszeichen modernen Strömungen steht, sondern es ist eher realistische Prosa. Also eher nordamerikanische Art und Weise vom Erzählen. Und das war aber für mich dann, ich war froh, weil das war auch und ist auch eine Bestätigung dafür, dass genau das der dortige Leser und auch der hierherige Leser braucht irgendwie. Damit aber will ich nicht irgendwie so weit gehen, dass ich mich als Spezialist für solche Fragen sehe und sowas. Für mich ist das natürlich wie für jeden Autor eine ganz persönliche Geschichte und sehr persönlich, und ich habe andere Geschichten zu erzählen, die gar nichts damit zu tun haben, werden oder haben können, aber das ist einfach ein Kapitel sozusagen.
Ja, aber dann ist es ja eigentlich besonders wichtig, wenn es zwei Figuren sind, zwei Protagonisten.
Ja, ja.
Einer, der in dieser Migrationserfahrung scheitert, während der andere ja tatsächlich diese kreative Möglichkeit hat.
Ja, aber das spricht dafür, es ist nicht, aber das spricht dafür, natürlich war das eine Versuchung sozusagen, das darzustellen, dass es auch innerhalb von diesen Kreisen, von diesen Ghettos, von diesen Menschen, die völlig am Rande in Deutschland oder im Westen der zweiten Klasse sozusagen leben, auch etwas passiert, in dem Sinne, dass es auch dort Unterschiede gibt, dass es auch dort zufällige und unglücklicherweise auch solche Abschnitte und solche Brutalität und solche Tragik gibt, die natürlich dann mit Komik verbunden ist, wenn sich die Leute dann auch treffen und was weiß ich. Aber die können ja nicht weggehen, weil die müssen sich innerhalb dieses Kreises so drehen.
Und trotzdem wollte ich die zwei Seiten von der Medaille sozusagen dann wiedergeben, erzählen darüber, dass sich die Menschen dann da irgendwie auch bewegen, sozusagen innerhalb dieses Kreises. Und auch so brutal es klingen mag und so brutal ist er auch als Ricky, trotzdem ist er auch ein Mensch. Also das muss man, die Tatsache, dass wir hier die Todesstrafe in Europa völlig abgeschafft haben, spricht doch dafür, dass wir ein paar gewisse Werte schon als Grundsätze sozusagen schon haben. Man muss dann immer Verständnis dafür zeigen, dass der Zufall oder der Fall und die Tatsachen so waren, dass es dazu gekommen ist. Und so ist es auch im Fall von Ricky. Also das ist nicht zu erklären nur mit 5 Zeilen in einem bunten, großen Blatt, sondern da steckt noch mehr.
Ja, im Verhältnis dazu, das ist Kosovo ist ja eine der jüngsten Gesellschaften der Welt gerade, oder wenn nicht sogar die jüngste Gesellschaft. Und dafür genau ist es ja... Man könnte fast sagen, ein Buch über diesen Möglichkeitsraum der Adoleszenz, also in dem diese beiden Jungs stehen, in dem möglicherweise sind viele Dinge, die jetzt in Kosovo passieren, noch in so einem unbestimmt oder unentschlossen, gerade auch für Jugendliche, die nicht wissen, wie ihre Zukunft sein wird. Und in die Migration zu gehen, in dieses Ungewisse, ist auch dafür ein Symbol oder ein Ausdruck, aber auch für diesen inneren Zustand, den man auch hat, wenn man dort bleibt.
Ja. Ja gut, ich meine, das ist die einfachste Lösung ist immer, dass man sich dass man dort sofort die Antwort sozusagen parat hat oder die Lösung parat hat, und zwar Emigration. Also keinen sollte das wundern, dass dort Kinder sozusagen produziert werden, unter Anführungszeichen, um die sofort nach dem Westen, sofort oder sobald es möglich ist, um Tausende von Euro zu bezahlen, um dorthin zu schicken, dass die ihre eigenen Träume dann verwirklichen. Ob das dann als Trauma sind, das ist eine große Frage, aber in meisten Fällen ja. Diejenigen, die dort bleiben, sind viel mutiger. Und die Eltern, die Verantwortung dafür tragen, dass die Kinder dort bleiben, entweder haben die wirklich sehr gute gesellschaftliche sozusagen Voraussetzungen und Logistik und Bedingungen, dass die ihre eigenen Kinder sozusagen dorthin behalten. Oder man schickt die Kinder oder versucht es wenigstens, die Kinder rauszubringen. Und man rechnet damit, dass der Gefahr viel geringer ist, wenn man das Kind draußen, in Anführungszeichen, da draußen im Westen, da im Westen hat, als wenn man die Kinder dort für sich und mit sich behält.
Hören wir noch einen Ausschnitt aus Der Glanz der Fremde von DJ Zufai. Und zwar ist es sozusagen der Beginn aus dem Dorf Reka. In diesem Dorf aus beginnt diese Migrationsgeschichte von Abend und Ricky und wird in ganz unterschiedlichen Erzählsträngen dann bis zum Schluss zu einer Katastrophe in dem Sinne, die in der Zwischenzeit doch auch als Teil von Migrationserfahrung gesehen werden kann, zugespitzt. Das heißt jetzt noch ein Ausschnitt von Beche Zufai.
Der kleine Ort, an dem ich meine Kindheit verbrachte, war kein Dorf, aber auch keine richtige Stadt. Er war ein Städtchen, das Reka hieß.
Reka bedeutet so viel wie Fluss, obwohl es unserem Städtchen gar keinen Fluss gab. Früher, so erzählte man sich, sei dieser Ort eine große Stadt gewesen und auch einen Fluss habe es gegeben, der allerdings zu einer Zeit, an die sich niemand mehr erinnern konnte, über die Ufer getreten sei und alles mit sich fortgerissen habe. Häuser, Menschen und Viech. Doch dann seien andere Menschen gekommen und hätten sich an der gleichen Stelle niedergelassen und ihre Häuser gebaut. Aber das war Erwachsenenkram. Ich war damals noch sehr klein und wusste nur eines ganz sicher, dass man mich Arben rief. Erst viel später erfuhr ich, dass die Menschen nicht nur einen Vornamen haben, sondern auch einen Nachnamen. Reka unterschied sich sehr von den Orten, die ich, als ich noch ein Kind war, im Schwarz-Weiß-Fernsehen zu sehen bekam. Bei diesen handelte es sich um große Städte mit turmhohen Gebäuden und kerzengeraden, hell erleuchteten Straßen, auf denen Hunderte von Autos umherfuhren. Diese Straßen waren gesäumt von ausladenden Gehsteigen, auf denen sich Menschenströme an hohen Fassaden entlang wälzten. Ein Labyrinth. In unserem Städtchen sah es ganz anders aus. Die Straßen waren nachts stockfinster. Die Leute benutzten die Fahrbahn, weil es keine Gehsteige gab. Man sah auch Pferdfuhrwerke, wie sie in den Städtchen im Fernsehen nicht vorkamen. Das reicht, glaub mir.
Ja, Mikrofon verabschiedet sich, Felicia Herrschaft. Das war jetzt BC Zufall, der Glanz der Fremde, 2005 im Zollner Verlag erschienen. Ja, auf bald. Ciao.